Welcome to the Dr. Gundry podcast, the weekly podcast where Dr. G gives you the tools you need to boost your health and live your healthiest life.
So, welcome to the Dr. Gundry podcast. You know, have you ever felt mediocre, untalented, or a step behind your peers? Has fear ever caused you to set your dreams aside and, well, play it safe? My guest today knows exactly what that feels like and is proof that you can turn things around. In just a minute, I'll speak with hotelier, humanitarian, and internationally known artist, Jeremy Cohort. Jeremy went from a struggling student to a world-renowned photographer who shot the likes of Taylor Swift, President Obama, and even Pope Francis. And now he's sharing his story through his book, I'm Possible, Jumping into Fear and Discovering a Life of Purpose. Today we're going to discuss how to break free from the can'ts and shouldn'ts holding us back to become the people we were meant to be. So, Jeremy, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
You know, you and I met in a very interesting way, and that was very serendipitous and a lot of fun. Do you mind mentioning how we met?
Of course, yeah. It's a crazy story. I've been on my own health journey, and I was on my way to L.A. to be on a Hallmark Channel show, and somebody had told me to read your book, and so I got the book to read on my trip to L.A. on the flight and back to Nashville. And so I've got your book, I'm flying out to L.A., and I get to the show, and on set, I'm backstage kind of waiting for my turn, and I hear somebody say your name, and I was like, wait a minute, you've got to be kidding me. And I realized that moment that you and I were the only two guests on that show that day. And it was just, I literally could not believe how small the world was in that moment. And so, yeah, that's how we met. It's pretty crazy.
So maybe we'll get back to, you know, why somebody gave you the book. But I want to talk more about, you know, why you wrote this book. And, you know, as a kid, apparently you struggled in every academic in school. You doubted you'd be anything other than mediocre. What kind of struggles did you have as a kid?
Yeah, I was just a very quiet, shy, average kid. Didn't think I would do much in life. Didn't make great grades. And so I had very low expectations for myself. And, you know, it took a long time to overcome all that. But, yeah, growing up, I just was a kind of a B, C student, never a straight A student, you know, that kind of thing. And I lived by the two words, I can't. I can't play baseball. I can't play piano. I can't do this, can't do that. And so, you know, my parents really helped me overcome those two words over the course of my life.
Interesting. So this kind of came from internally, these words. It wasn't coming from your parents?
No, it was all internal, just my own self-doubt, fear, you know, all that stuff.
So what did you think you were destined to do?
I wasn't sure. I figured it would be in the arts, whether it be music or art itself, you know. I was definitely into music growing up, but I wasn't really sure. I was kind of game for whatever.
So, well, you're from Nashville, so I hope you were into music.
Yeah. I actually grew up singing professionally in a little kids group. We sang on a Willie Nelson record and John Denver and all these, you know, famous artists. So I was a professionally trained vocalist as a child, which is pretty crazy.
Wow. So wait a minute. So how in the heck do you go from a vocalist to, you know, a world-famous photographer?
I don't know. I don't know.
What was the turning point that, you know, you realized, hey, I'm not going to be a vocalist. I think I'll take some pictures.
Yeah, we are jumping around. I mean, there's obviously a lot in the between those moments, and it's, of course, all in the book. But I had a band in college with my brothers, and when I could tell that they weren't as serious about it as I was, I decided to turn my attention towards the arts, visual arts. And so I studied graphic design in college, got, you know, minored in illustration, and at that point knew that visual arts is what I wanted to do. So graphic design is actually what I did a long time before switching to photography, because I actually took one photography class in college and I got a D and nearly failed. And so it wasn't until many years later that I rediscovered photography and fell in love with it.
Huh. So, yeah, you got to help me with that. So you almost failed photography.
Mm-hmm.
And sounds like you were quite a good graphic artist. What was the turning point that you say, you know, I'm so bad at photography, I think I ought to take it up as a career?
Yeah, well, it was, you know, photography was one of those required classes in college. I didn't actually want to take it, but I had to, and I didn't do it very well. And so that was 98, 99, and then it wasn't until 2001 that the first digital camera came about. And at that point, I already knew the world of digital editing. I knew Photoshop because I was a graphic designer. I knew all the digital tools. So once a digital camera came into play, that made a lot of sense for me to start playing with. And so I would actually use a camera to scan in images and textures to use in my design. And then living in Nashville, all my friends were musicians. And so once they found out I had a camera, then they would ask me to start shooting them. And then I turned out to be good at it. And then their labels would start hiring me, and the rest kind of took off from there. I was discovered by an agent in Hollywood, and then she put me on a roster. And the next thing I knew, I was shooting, you know, big celebrities in Hollywood and around the country.
That's fascinating. That was actually what my question was going to be, because my guess was that you were going to take pictures to work in graphic arts, and one thing led to another. So I should have said that first, because then I'd look really smart. that's fascinating. Were there people along the way who, when this started happening, you know, guided you in this direction? Were there people who really made a difference in your life going this direction?
Yeah, of course. I mean, obviously my parents had a massive impact, and I talk a lot about that in the book. But then I found this guy who was kind of not even a mentor, he was a hero, somebody I idolized and looked up to, and I got to meet him at one point, and we became friends. And he's the one that said, you should buy this new thing called a digital camera, which that changed my life. And he was also the one to say, you should quit your ad agency job and start your own company. And he told me that at the age of 24. I'm now 42, and I've worked for myself ever since that day. He said, you should quit your job tomorrow. And I did quit my job tomorrow. And again, that was 18 years ago, and I've never looked back.
Whoa, what? I mean, quitting your job at 24.
Yeah.
And doing something that you almost flunked out of in college. I mean, take our listeners and viewers, what goes through your mind? How do you do that? Because a lot of, you know, folks are in that position. How the heck do you do that?
Yeah, I think oftentimes, you know, when we're most afraid to do something, that might mean we're most meant to do that thing, you know. You hear a lot of actors in Hollywood say they chose to do this film because they were terrified of it. And I'm often drawn to the things that I'm really scared of. You know, I'm drawn to jumping into that dark place of fear, and just kind of not knowing what's going to happen, but being excited. And I like the idea of risk. I like even as a kid, I loved, you know, walking into a haunted house. And back in the 80s, they were actually really scary. People could actually grab you. And, you know, these days there'd be lawsuits involved. But I remember in the 80s, I just loved, like, walking into these haunted houses, because even as a businessman now, that's what it feels like when you're starting something new, you know, in your world, when people are starting a new way of eating, a new lifestyle. Like, it all can be very, very daunting and scary to try something new. But I've found over and over again that I'm just really drawn to that moment, to that feeling. And, you know, the worst that can happen is you can fail. And I find that even through failure, you're still learning a ton. And so it's really not failure.
So have you, now you credit your parents, like you mentioned, with a lot of this. Are they sounds like they're the real backbones that are there to give you the confidence to leap out into the void.
Yeah, for sure.
And what did they think when you quit your job at 24?
They were, you know, worried for the obvious reasons, you know, worried about me. Are you sure that's a good idea? Because I had, you know, health benefits and all, you know, all the things, insurance, all that good stuff. But I was, you know, I was pretty hard headed and knew that I needed to do it. You know, I was kind of drowning in the corporate world. It didn't inspire me. It didn't motivate me. And I knew that I enjoyed working with my friends a lot more. So I knew that it was time to jump.
You know, we've had other people on the podcast that kind of tell a similar story that, you know, the corporate world, they were drowning or strangling, and they, you know, they made similar leaps. And it's fascinating, you know, where do you get the courage to do this? And you think it sounds like you were kind of born just to take leaps into scary things.
Maybe it's definitely still scary. Like right now, I'm sure we'll get there in a minute, but I'm pursuing a new career, a new journey that is more terrifying than anything I've ever done. And it's not like you overcome fear. It's not like I finally defeated fear, because fear is still there every single day, fear and doubt and insecurities. But I just know that those things are part of the journey. You know, they're at 9 a.m. tomorrow when I get back to work, they're all going to be there again. But it's just being a professional, that knowing you're still going to be battling those inner voices.
So there, your career as a photographer, were there fearful moments when you were going to take a picture of a star who was intimidating, or President Obama or the Pope? How do you get ready to photograph somebody like that?
Yeah, it's wild for sure. I've had some wild encounters, and I do get starstruck. I do get nervous, but also I have to remember that they're just another human being like myself, and they also have their fears and insecurities, and I just have to treat them like I would treat anybody. You know, I think that's the most important thing, is treat the, you know, janitor in my building the same as I would treat, you know, President Obama or whoever I was photographing at the time. I'm very laid back. My countenance right now in this interview is the same as it is on a big photo shoot, you know. So taking pictures is not changing lives. It's not saving lives. It should be fun. A lot of people take it way too seriously. So my approach is, let's have some fun. Let's make some cool images and see what happens.
So I take it you're not kind of like Austin Powers with his camera going, work it, baby, work it.
You know, sometimes I kind of have to play that role for sure. I've done some fashion shoots, and the client wants me to be a lot more talkative and encourage the model more. So I've had to find my inner Austin Powers a few times. Yeah.
It turns out we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come right back because I want to hear about what happens next.
Sure.
Okay?
All right.
Okay. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Hey, podcast listeners. Dr. Gundry here, and I need your help. I'm always trying to improve this podcast so I can bring the most valuable and insightful information to you, the listeners. In the show notes for each episode of this podcast, you'll find a link to a survey. Please just take a few minutes to fill it out so I can learn more about you and what you would most like to hear us discuss on the show. Your opinion really matters, so thank you. And now, back to the show.
Okay, we are back with the author of I'm Possible, and it's Jeremy Cowart. Jeremy, thanks for joining us. And you look like you're in studio for those of you who can't see us. And he's got a couple dogs running around in the background. So
I look
off camera a little bit, I'm looking at his dogs. How many dogs do you have?
Just two, a big golden retriever and a little shih tzu.
Yeah, great. Tell me what people on a regular basis can overcome a feeling of, you know, defeat and forge ahead. You got to give us some tricks, because you're right, everybody fails. And quite frankly, if those of us who are listening haven't failed yet, you haven't been at this long enough.
Exactly. I just feel like my story in the book is everybody's story. Like once I've, it's the reason that this, you know, I did the talk. So my buddy, let me rewind. My buddy years ago, Johnny Cuff, asked me to speak at his conference. I said, dude, I'm not a speaker. I can't remember a talk. Like, that's just not my thing. But then I came back a few days later. I was like, you know what? I think if I drew a talk in Photoshop and made a time-lapse video, that could be really cool. And so I did it. And the story, the video was about my childhood and how I couldn't do anything. I did bad in photography. I got fired from my first ad agency job, was told I wasn't creative enough, you know, just never had a lot of confidence. But then I overcame all that and went on to become a very successful photographer. But then realized, like, success to me didn't mean as much as I hoped it would or I thought it would. And so what did matter, and it goes into my journeys as a humanitarian photographer and somebody who does projects that try to help others in need. So I made that talk, and then that launched my career as a speaker. So I've now presented that story all over the country. And the reason it's successful is not because of me, but because that story, like you're saying, it is everybody. You know, we all have people look at you, they look at me, and they think that we've got it all figured out and that we're, you know, that we're just on this pathway to perfection, you know, but they have no clue that I'm still wake up every day with all these issues still, you know, insecurities and doubts.
So what does it mean to be a humanitarian photographer?
I guess it could be interpreted a lot of different ways. I think for me, it just means when you use a camera to help in times of need. So I've done wildfire humanitarian projects. I've done hurricane disaster relief projects. I'd like to tell stories. For example, after the wildfires in Gatlinburg, Tennessee, a couple years ago, they destroyed it was devastating, much like the California wildfires. And I went down there and just told stories of people and what they lost through drones, using a drone to photograph the damage with a white mattress in the middle of all of it, with the person laying on the mattress, so you could really see the perspective and scale. And then we built crowdfunding pages for each of those people. And then I tried to spread the word. So Time Magazine did a huge feature on that project. And so I think it's just anytime you're using your camera to offer humanitarian aid in some sense.
Yeah, and you're quite the humanitarian now, and I understand you've got this exciting new project. Do you want to talk about that? Is that an offshoot of what you've been speaking about?
A little bit, yeah. So basically April 30th, 2012, I was in Los Angeles for a photo shoot. And I was walking through a hotel to the meeting, and just randomly, I had just a ginormous idea for a new hotel brand. Keep in mind, I have no experience in hospitality, nor does anyone in my family. I don't even have any friends in the hospitality industry. So this was as random could be. I mean, I just out of nowhere had a really big idea for a hotel. And the idea was that hit me in that moment was like, there should be a hotel where everything in the building is connected to causes and nonprofits, so that when people choose this hotel brand, they are changing the world around them for the better. And I had the idea to call it the Purpose Hotel. And so, it was really good. I knew it was a good idea, but I was still terrified of it. I was 35 years old at the time. freelance photographer, wet photographer, goes and builds a global hotel chain. So I pocketed the idea for 3 years because I was so afraid of it. It was too big. And then in 2015, I started taking steps towards that. We launched a Kickstarter to the public, and we raised nearly 700 grand to kind of get the ball rolling. That money has obviously gone to all of our mini startup, you know, architects and designers and attorneys and websites and graphic designers, all kinds of stuff. And now we're well on our way. We should break ground on our first hotel in Nashville next year. And so there's a lot happening, but, you know, it turns out you can build a hotel from scratch. It's pretty crazy.
So how? So you don't know anything about this, right?
Yeah.
So you say, I'm going to open a Kickstarter campaign, mm-hmm. and I want people to give me money to do something I know nothing about. what goes through your head? Where do you get the inner strength to pull this off, to pitch yourself? And I actually want to take an excerpt from your book. You use the old saying, fake it until you make it. Is that kind of your mentality in all this?
Yeah, on my photo career it was, for sure. On the hotel front, obviously it's a much bigger business that involves a lot more people. And so to answer your question, probably my biggest strength is how well I know my weaknesses. And so I go and find people that fill in the gaps of my weaknesses. And so with the hotel, you know, when I made the decision to launch a Kickstarter, it actually took us about a year before we launched the Kickstarter. And during that year, you know, I got a business partner who is extreme left brain and knows the hotel industry. And together, you know, we got it going. Now we have a CFO, an advisory board, a lot of other people that do know what they're doing, that do have decades of hospitality experience. And so it's definitely not me anymore. I'm a part of a much bigger team, but it did take me to kind of get the vision going, put the pieces together. And, you know, like I said, it took a year just to launch the Kickstarter, and another year to kind of do it and wrap it up and get everybody sent their, you know, robes and desks that they ordered and keys and all that stuff. And so it's a lot of work.
That reminds me of a song from one of my favorite reggae artists, Shaggy. And Shaggy's got a song that his mother said, if you're the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room.
Mm-hmm.
And just hearing you say that just brought that song into my mind. And I think, yeah, what you just said is brilliant advice. Surround yourself with smarter people, and it'll make you smarter.
Yeah, I can't even convey how funny it is for me to be in hotel meetings now with all these just brilliant business people. I don't even know what a lot of the words they're saying means. Like I'm over there acting like I'm working, and I'm actually like Googling the words they're saying just so I can understand what they mean, you know? So yeah, I'm in way over my head, but again, thankfully I do have a business partner and a CFO and a lot of advisors and people on our team that they know what they're talking about.
But you're not just the pretty face of this operation, are you?
No, so I've spent 7 years. It's not just the idea that I had. It's probably a couple hundred ideas within the hotel, because I've spent these 7 years really thinking about, okay, what happens when they enter the room? What happens when they walk in the elevator? Which organizations are going to be involved? What will those organizations do? How will the soaps be connected, the blankets, the art, the furniture? So I'm really the creative director, if you will. I think through all the creative elements. I care about what people are going to smell, how they're going to feel, how they're going to be welcomed, what the staff is going to say to them when they walk in the hotel. That's really where my head lives, you know? So I guess you could call that the visionary, the creative director. But yeah, when it comes to the day-to-day operations, that is definitely not my role.
Okay. So getting back to something you said earlier, are there other misconceptions out there about successful people? You've all obviously mentioned one, that this automatically didn't happen for you. Any other misconceptions about successful people? You certainly see successful people in your life.
Yeah, I mean, gosh, I think there's misconceptions now every day about all of us, because social media is the king of misconceptions. We're all, you know, posting our highlights and the best moments of our lives, and it's really can really cause some serious, even for me, some serious depression. Because anytime you go on social media, you are looking at all the things you didn't get to do, all the people you didn't get to hang out with, all the events you didn't attend, all the parties you didn't attend, all the cars you don't drive, all the, you know. And so it's kind of poisonous, I think, for a lot of us, you know. And I really feel for young people. You know, you and I get to grow up without social media, which I think was amazing, to not have it growing up. And so I really feel for people. And so, you know, I don't know why I got off on that tangent, because you asked me about, you know, kind of celebrities, or successful people. And I mean, there's so many misconceptions. Like I said, they're all insecure. They all have their battles they're facing. And we just from the outside get to see the wins. It's important for us to remember that. Even as a guy whose job it is to, like, here's how a photo shoot works. So, you know, let's say whatever blank beautiful female celebrity walks into my studio. They've hired the best hair and makeup people, right, in the world to do their hair and makeup, the best wardrobe stylist to make them look literally perfect. Then my job is to light them the most flattering way possible. And then we take 2,000 photos in one day. Then we narrow that, you know, down to one photo. Then that one photo gets sent to the best skin retoucher in the planet, that then goes in pore by pore and fixes their skin. Then the poor teenager reading the magazine looks at that photo and thinks, oh, I wish I looked like that. Little does she know that that celebrity also looked like crap when they walked in the door for the photo shoot, you know. And so it's amazing how much work goes into, you know, making celebrities or successful people look the way they do. That nobody look, even the models I shoot, they all look like everyday people when they walk in the door.
Should we have a caption at the bottom of all these pictures saying, warning, you know, professional celebrity on a closed course, don't try this at home?
Yeah, exactly. Thankfully, there is a trend now where a lot of magazines, I've seen Target do it, they're starting to show photos that are not retouched. They're showing men and women that are not super thin. You know, there is a trend towards showing real life, which I think is amazing.
Yeah, and I think, you know, as you just kind of ripped on, we've got to do something about the power of social media. I'm not smart enough to figure out what that is, but it's certainly capable of ruining an awful lot of lives.
Mm-hmm.
Besides the good benefit, there's a lot of bad benefits. I don't know. Luckily, my children are grown, but I have two grandchildren that, luckily, are very young yet. But I fear for them in the coming years.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily, their parents are pretty doggone grounded, so we'll see.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right. So, give me one more example. I think this hotel concept is fascinating. You know, we hear all about recycling, and we hear all about hotels that are using indigenous people. It sounds like you're kind of putting this all in one concept.
Mm-hmm.
Give me an example of what can a guest expect? I mean, what's going to be in the room that makes your hotel so different than what's out there?
Yeah, it'll be pretty thorough. So, for example, when you walk in your room, when you access the internet, there'll be free internet, or you can upgrade the internet. But when you upgrade, that money will go to fight against human trafficking through an organization called International Justice Mission. When you order room service, you'll feed a child in need through Food for the Hungry. Your blankets will be sewn by survivors of human trafficking. The artwork will come from humanitarian photographers and other artists out there. There'll be a charity water well in the lobby that teaches people about clean water and the importance of that, you know. So kind of wherever it makes sense to make a connection to a humanitarian cause, we will do that. We're talking to organizations where they teach homeless men how to build furniture. So the desk you sit on to work at your hotel will most likely be built by a homeless person who was employed to build that desk. And so the goal is to create as many jobs out there for people locally, domestically, and internationally. And if the hotel doesn't do that, then it's just another hotel brand, which I find quite boring. And so we have to be successful in our mission to help people all over the world.
Well, that's fantastic. And thank you for mentioning Charity Water. I'm a personal supporter of Charity Water, and profits from Gundry MD go to Charity Water.
Oh, that's
so
awesome.
Far with Gundry MD, we've built now over 1,000 wells.
That's incredible.
For people who had dirty water. And I've had the privilege to go to Ethiopia this year and actually see this in action. And so good for you.
Yeah.
It's a phenomenal organization.
What a small world. Yeah, Scott Harrison is a dear friend of mine, and he's one of the first people I ever told about the hotel idea. So Scott and I are very connected, and he wants to build an actual functioning well in the hotel. So we're really excited about that.
Well, that's going to be fun. Maybe you'll let me come and help drill it while you're there.
And
yeah, so we now have 2 degrees of separation.
Absolutely. And obviously this, I would think, goes without saying, but in the hotel, clean eating is going to be truly a massive priority for us. I don't believe something should be called the Purpose Hotel and we should be selling, you know, junk food in the hotel. And so, I'm really excited to push healthy living, clean eating, hardcore through our hotel.
That's fantastic. You and I met because of a health issue that you were facing, and you know, you don't have to, but can you, if you feel like it, can you update me on how things are going?
Sure. Yeah, I found out just this year that I have a disease called Friedreich's ataxia, and for years ago, somebody noticed that I couldn't walk straight. And I was athletic in high school and college. I played a lot of sports, and so that was news to me. I was like, what do you mean I can't walk straight? Of course I can. And sure enough, he was right. I couldn't walk in a straight line. And ever since then, it's gotten a lot worse. I sometimes walk like a drunk, and so I am on a long journey to figure it out, you know, to figure out what can help. And I'm a big fan of what you do and what you teach, and so far I have struggled just personally to find the discipline to perfectly follow your diet, but I believe 1,000% that it works. And I believe you when you told me that your plan has specifically helped people with ataxia. I very much believe that, because I did quit a lot of things hardcore last year. I quit gluten and dairy and soy and corn and coffee, alcohol, sugar, fried foods, you know, all of that. And I saw just a 1,000% turnaround. All my symptoms went away. And then I've also obviously tried the lectin-free, and it does work. Absolutely. I just travel a lot, and I struggle to follow diets when I'm traveling, sitting with a client at a restaurant, and there just simply are no options for me. So it's definitely a struggle, but I'm definitely a huge supporter and believer.
Well, let me tell you a success story from yesterday.
Cool.
And I think this may give you some more motivation. A young 34-year-old gentleman came to me with his wife, and he had some neurologic symptoms, and I won't go into them. And we did some very specialized tests from from a company that looks not only for leaky gut, but looks at whether or not you react to lectins, but also looks for a lot of markers of brain injury, autoimmune markers of brain injury. And when we first did this test, actually about 2 months ago, he was on a gluten-free diet, but there was tons of gluten in him because he traveled a lot. And he was shocked. And we found that, in fact, he was sensitive to a number of lectins, including spinach. There's a lectin in spinach that I won't go into today. But he had two markers of brain inflammation, one of which was a demyelinization, which correlates with developing MS. And that, you know, got his attention. And so his wife said, look, for the next 2 months, I'm going to cook all your meals. If you're traveling, I'm going to put them, you know, in things wherever you go. You can heat them in the hotel. You're going to do this. Now, this guy is a meat and potatoes guy. And I saw him yesterday because we had just repeated his labs. And he first thing he did, he says, I got to tell you, this was the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. Mm. You know, I am a smart guy. I'm a good businessman. This was the hardest thing. It was like withdrawing from drugs. And I can't believe how hard this was. And unless my wife had, you know, kept at me, I would have stopped. And he said, it was really hard. He said, now the last 2 weeks, it's okay. I've finally gotten over my pity party. And so we open up his new labs. And this guy, the way it works, red shows lots of gluten. So he's almost all green. He's got a couple little markers here and there, but almost all the gluten is gone. But then we open up his neuro, it's called a neurozoomer. And both markers of his brain inflammation are gone.
Wow.
He's normal. Yeah. And he goes, and his wife turns to him, and she actually hits him in the shoulder. And she says, you see, dummy, I told you this was going to work. And,
yeah.
It, you know, the guy's so excited. But he was, quite frankly, he was so miserable trying to adhere to this. And if it wasn't for his wife doing all this. So all I can tell you is, it is worth it. I just saw it again yesterday. It's really hard, and good for you. And you know, listen, I'll volunteer to help you with the restaurant and what should go into those foods.
Oh man, we would love that. We would really love that.
Because as you know, I'm on a mission for this. Mm-hmm. And heck, if you're going to have a charity water well in the hotel, I'm there.
Absolutely, yeah. We can't wait to partner with them, but I'll take you up on that. I will definitely hit you up because we've already had a lot of meetings about the restaurant and the food and all that. So that would be an honor to work with you on that.
Well, I was the nutritional advisor for Six Senses hotels and resorts, and the entire Eat with Six Senses program is mine, and my colleague Patrick Wahlberg. So I know how to do this and implement it. So I'm happy to help.
I love it.
Yeah, what do you hope people take away from reading your book?
I hope they find themselves in my story, and I hope that they see that truly anything is possible. You know, I'm building a hotel from scratch, a global hotel chain. Like, if I can do that as a failure in school, as the guy who got fired from his first job and the guy who nearly failed photography, if I can do all this, then, you know, just imagine what you, the listener, can do.
Yeah, is there anything scaring you now, or is this hotel scaring you to death and don't want to think about other things?
The hotel is definitely still scaring me every day. I can't even express how big and complex it is. But I'm doing another project in the Bahamas, hurricane relief project in the Bahamas, so it'll be quite complicated as well. And that's certainly scary, but also exciting to think that we can possibly help.
What do you do for yourself? What's your downtime other than having two dogs?
Well, I have four kids, and so my I have a 13-year-old, an 11-year-old that are biological. Then I have an adopted son who is 8 and an adopted daughter who is 7. And so we are fully busy with sports and all the things.
And any downtime? Doesn't sound like it.
Yeah, not a lot of downtime. I travel a lot. My wife's a real estate agent, and so we have multiple careers that we're juggling. But anytime I'm with my family, you know, in the outdoors, that's pretty much a good downtime spent for me.
All right, yeah, spend more time outdoors.
That's right.
I agree. It's been great having you on the program and to see you again. And where can listeners find out about you and your work? And, you know, how do we, you know, contribute to the hotel or urge you on?
Yeah, thank you for asking. It's all pretty easy. I'm at Jeremy Cowart on all socials. I'm jeremycowart.com. The book you're holding, my new book, I'm Possible, can also be purchased on my website. And then for The Purpose Hotel, it's just thepurposehotel.com and The Purpose Hotel on socials. So.
And is this going to be a worldwide hotel? Is that your vision?
That is certainly the vision, because it's simple. The more hotels there are, the more people are helped. And so, yeah, absolutely. As many as possible.
Love the concept, and I love what you're doing.
Thank you so much.
Keep us informed.
Will do.
All right. Take care.
All right, you too.
Okay, it's time for the audience question. Liz 851 on Instagram wrote in and asked, I'm new to Plant Paradox. Does the food have to be organic? Where I live, we don't have access to many organic items, and if we do, they're very pricey. Will I be able to do the program without buying organic? Great question, Liz, and I talk about all this often. So one of my favorite sayings is, do what you can with what you got wherever you are. No, you don't have to do organic to do this program. Do I think the more organic you do, the better? Yes. In fact, there's some very good human data looking at families who were asked to eat organic for 2 weeks, and the level of pesticides and heavy metals and herbicides in their body, in their blood, dramatically fell in 2 weeks' time just by changing to organic. Now, the other good news is major retailers, like, for instance, Walmart, have now pretty much insisted that the organic foods that they have and their organic suppliers are going to charge the same amount for organic as conventional products. And you're going to see a movement of other major retailers following Walmart's lead. So Walmart's almost everywhere. And if it's not in your town, it's probably in the town next door. And it's probably well worth a trip to go to a Walmart. I have nothing for or against Walmart, but good for them for making organic possible for families who otherwise can't afford organic. So, but do what you can do. Get rid of junk food, and if a conventional head of romaine lettuce is all you can afford, that's a whole lot better than a bag of Cheetos, okay? So that's the message. Review of the week. We got the review of the week. PH0813 from Apple Podcasts writes, I start every Monday morning off with your amazing podcast. I've read all your books, thank you very much, and continue to apply the vast knowledge you provide in them for my health and diet routines daily. I have learned so much over the last few years about the food industry, and thank you for being a reliable and valuable resource for making this truthful information readily available. Well, thank you for writing that. That's actually why I do this, to get you the information to improve your health. And please, if you're enjoying these podcasts, write in and tell me. I actually read this, and it really motivates me to keep doing what I do. And if you've got a question, please write us. I read your questions, and we'll have a podcast about it, I promise. We'll get to you. So thanks so much for writing. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for joining me on this episode of the Dr. Gundry Podcast. Before you go, I just wanted to remind you that you can find the show on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you want to watch each episode of the Dr. Gundry Podcast, you can always find me on YouTube at youtube.com/Dr. Gundry. Because I'm Dr. Gundry, and I'm always looking out for you.